BBC Radio Solent.
Loving life in the South.
Hello and welcome to the Big Dorset Brunch podcast. My name's Harry Crawford and this is a free download from BBC Radio Solent. For more information on our programmes, just go to bbc.co.uk/Solent. BBC Radio Solent. This week on the Big Dorset Brunch podcast, we're catching up with Dorset author Darren Wells and talking about the new film adaptation of his debut novel, Life and Soul. The story has been given a new name for the big screen. It's called About Her, and it's all set in our part of the world. Darren popped in for a chat and told me they've been trying to recruit a bunny rabbit to play a key part in the movie.
We put an ad on various places, and we put word of mouth out and things like that, and we've ended up with 70 applicants, all different sizes.
70 rabbits want this gig.
70 rabbits, all different sizes, all different colours, all different personalities. Mm. We've now parked it, and I'll come on to the reason why we parked it.
Okay.
But then we'll come back to it, and we'll pick one of them.
Okay.
But it was just crazy. We were just being inundated with rabbits.
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. For people that have missed this,
yes.
And this is your first film. It's your novel, Life and Soul. Just remind us what it's about.
I went out with a girl for a considerable length of time, and we'd been on holiday. Came back from holiday on the Friday, and then on the Monday I found her dead. She'd died from undiagnosed epilepsy. And rather than sort of fall apart and do that whole kind of thing that people do, I decided to write a book. And it was about the two of us, but written as a work of fiction, but based around our lives. And then one morning I woke up and decided, actually, this would make quite a good film. And that was 10 months ago. And I'll sort of go through where we are.
And it's been a whirlwind since.
It's kind of been crazy, really.
How does one go from taking your first book to making it into a film? Because there must be all sorts of sort of hurdles to get over along the way.
Do you know what? I'd love to say it was really difficult, but actually I did nothing more complicated than I went on Wikipedia and got a list of all the people you need to make a film.
Brilliant.
And started from there.
It's like a paint-by-numbers sort of
thing. Pretty much.
Yeah.
It wasn't complicated. It wasn't difficult. I think you just have to be prepared for some people to say no and just keep hassling other people until they say yes.
And we've had some big developments since we last talked, because you've now got someone on board of fairly considerable repute.
Yeah, we have a director now. We had a director before, but as the project seemed to grow and grow and grow, he felt that it was really something outside his comfort zone, which was fair enough. The director we've got is also a writer, and I'll come on in a minute to where we are with the writing side of it. But in terms of the director, his name's Nigel Douglas. I can actually say that without being in trouble from anyone. He did some of the early episodes of EastEnders. He did some of Grange Hill. He's also done This Life, for any of the people who are old enough to remember that. He's just done some of the episodes of Hotel Babylon and also Wild at Heart. So he's
got a cracking CV.
Yeah, he's won a few BAFTAs. Mm. So from our point of view, that's a fantastic person to get on board.
How did you sort of pitch it to him, if you
like? Well, again, I found his telephone number on the internet and I just rang him up. And he lives in Northamptonshire and he travelled down to Bournemouth to meet me. And his opening gambit was, "My girlfriend thinks you're a nutter, but I had to come and find out for myself." But he's a writer
as well.
That's
a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, great. But he seems to like the project. And so it's been really good. And he's helping me to not so much rewrite the script, but to develop it still further. And that's been very hard for me because obviously up until this point, it's all been my work.
Mm.
And then for someone else to come on board and go, no, you don't want to do that. You want to do this. And it's much darker in some places and much lighter in others.
We've got Darren Wells in the studio this morning. His first novel, Life and Soul, set to become a film called About Her, all set in the local area. And Darren's here telling us a bit about it. Were there many changes that sort of had to be made between it being a novel and between it being a screenplay? Because I know the two are very different arts.
Well, I thought, naively, obviously, that my version would be good enough to get it made into a film. And my version stuck quite closely to the book.
Mm.
Gave my version to a director, and he had a look at it and said, "This is a lovely story, but it's too nice, and people won't pay £10 to go and sit for two hours in a cinema and basically watch their lives unfold on the screen." So he's rewritten the structure and then put my dialogue. We've kind of working on putting my dialogue back in. So it's now much darker. So you know, we all go and see films and we've read the book and we go, well, the film's nothing like the book.
Yeah.
I now kind of understand.
You understand the process.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
What
an insight to get.
Yeah.
Because that's so often the case. How often do you go and see a film and think, yep, just like the book?
Yeah.
Almost never.
And
really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I mean, moving on from this, one of the things I intend to do is I'm going to turn this into my new career, is making films. And now I understand this process that you have to go through. And, you know, people, when they pay their money, they want to go and see something that they don't see in the office or they don't see at home.
Yeah.
So it does have to be more extreme, more exaggerated, because you've only got them for 2 hours.
And a lot of the filming set to be done in and around Poole, you were saying?
Yes, we... without kind of
giving the game away.
Yeah, yeah. We now have boats and things like that. And as a result, that doesn't mean it's James Bond, by the way. There's not speedboats blowing up, but just normal boats. But as a result of that, we're going to be looking, I think, to film as much of it as we can in Poole and areas like that, because they're quite iconic areas that people know of. So to film it here would make quite a lot of sense.
And you've had a fantastic response already. 800 people.
Yeah, just over 800 people on Facebook.
In about 5 minutes.
Can I give a shameless plug to Facebook? If anyone wants to go and join Facebook, bear in mind it's free, so we're not asking anyone for any money to go and follow what happens with the film when I'm not on the radio. It's www.facebook.com/aboutherfilm, all one word. And just go and become a fan and just follow what's happening. Because over the course of the next couple of months, hopefully you'll have me back on at some point. But in between there, people will get the updates as they happen.
We'll definitely have you back on, don't worry about it. We're intrigued to follow this story. I'm intrigued about the rabbits. We'll get back on to the rabbits in a sec. AboutHer.org, though, the website people can also check out.
And they can check out that.
Let's talk about rabbits then.
Okay.
You had this rabbit. You had 70 applicants. The rabbit plays quite a crucial part, doesn't he?
I want to kind of put this into context.
Yeah.
He's not a talking rabbit.
Yeah.
We don't expect a rabbit to juggle.
It's not Alice in Wonderland.
No, there's nothing like that. It's just a bog standard, twitchy nose, floppy eared, carrot eating rabbit. Mm-hmm. It's nothing more than that. But he is quite important because the main male character uses it as a muse throughout the film. So that's why it's so important. So we just needed someone that was tame, or something that was tame.
Someone,
just dress him in a rabbit costume. Yeah. A rabbit that was tame and quite affectionate and those kind of things. And everything else is fine.
And you had 70 applicants.
70 applicants, all different shapes and sizes and things like that. From the tiniest rabbits to rabbits that you would put a saddle on and let it ride round with a child on
its
back.
There are some incredibly huge rabbits,
massive, absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And they all assure me that their rabbits are really docile. Now, having
everyone
had a rabbit,
says that about their rabbit.
You just know it's going to bite and do those kind of things. But, you know, it's a nice touch, and we've had a fantastic response. So,
speaking of nice touches, and I've got to ask, because I know this happens quite a lot when the author's book is made into a film, are you going to appear in the film yourself?
No, absolutely
not. Not even a walk-on
cameo? This face is for radio only, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that makes two of us. Darren Wells there, the man behind the new film, abouther.org, for more information. BBC Radio. Now, if you've ever attempted to make your own wine, you'll know what an exact science this is. Even the professionals have problems. The weather can play havoc with your grapes before you've even begun, and wet weather, in particular, can be catastrophic. Zoe Kleiman went to Crawthorne's Vineyard in Dewlish to find out how new winemakers had got on with their first ever harvest.
Here we sit enjoying the shade.
Hey, brother, pour the wine.
Drink the drink that I have made.
Hey, brother, pour the wine.
Okay, what we have here is Pinot Noir from the Crawthorne Farm Vineyard. It's a beautiful, slightly salmon pink colour. On the nose, we have summer fruits, strawberries, raspberries, with a hint of creaminess. It's like a strawberry yoghurt, maybe.
Chris Carter is winemaker here at farmer Justin Langham's new vineyard in Dewlish. He knows all too well how difficult it is to grow grapes.
If you visit Champagne and have a look at the countryside of Champagne, it is incredibly similar to Dorset. The rolling hills, the woods on top of these hills, looks almost identical. So find yourself a nice south-facing hill in Dorset and you've got a good place to grow grapes. Unfortunately, we have the weather to contend with, which actually hit Champagne harder than us this year. They had terrible problems with a disease called botrytis. Every vineyard has a little bit of it, but because of the very rainy September we had and Champagne had, a lot of people lost a lot of fruit. So we were very lucky this year.
What is it? What exactly does it cause?
It's grey mould. It's universal. Anything. If you leave a satsuma on a table, in a couple of weeks. It'll have that grey fur over it. So all fruit, all living matter decays away, and this is the disease, fungus that causes it.
Does it just taste bad, or is it actually poisonous?
It's not actually poisonous, but it will make the wine taste bad. It's you really do need to avoid it at all costs.
And once a fruit has got it, that's it?
Yes, but the idea is to not let it get it, and various ways you can do that. Stop the birds getting in, because as soon as the bird pecks a berry, that's an open wound for this mold to get in. We also drop any bad fruit. If we see there's a problem, we'll take it out of the vineyard before it's got a chance to spread anywhere else. Also, when we're picking the final fruit, we explain to our pickers very, very carefully to only take the very best quality fruit. So that way we avoided problems.
Now, Justin, let me just talk to you about this. You're the owner of this vineyard and you have yet to actually produce any wine for sale. What did you think when you heard about this epidemic?
Well, there are many problems with growing grapes and growing any crops. And being a farmer, I'm really quite used to diseases and problems one gets with these crops at any stage right the way through. So I just took it on the chin. You know, it's just you have to.
It sounds like quite a risky business. Is it frustrating at all working in this sort of industry?
It is a risky business. I wouldn't say it's frustrating. I think it's enormously rewarding. But it is risky, and you wouldn't invest in a business like this if it was your last money you had. As I said earlier, you know, we're farmers here, and you know, we see this as a diversification.
And when do you think you'll be ready to bring your first batch to market?
Well, we're hoping the first will be available in summer 2012. But that's 18 months away. We're just going to have to see how the wine matures. We don't want to bring it to the market too early until it's really at its optimum stage. If it means waiting another 6 months or a year, maybe we'll have to do that. But we're hoping 2012. That's our target.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Zoe Kleinman there speaking to Chris Carter and Justin Langham at Crawthorne's Vineyard. You can read more about that on our website, bbc.co.uk/Solent. BBC Radio Solent. Now, here on the Big Dorset Brunch, we are determined to keep our New Year's resolutions. Health and fitness is one in particular. And how about this for a different and gentle way of keeping fit? Gardening. Well, the Dorset Wildlife Trust have launched a new project to help you do just that and help some of our beautiful countryside here in Dorset. Catherine Mason is the Pastures new project officer, and she told us a bit more about it.
The project primarily is focusing on trying to improve the grasslands in West Dorset to increase the species richness of the area and create more wildflowers in our meadows. But this also leads to more insects, obviously, coming to feed on the plants, obviously a lot of butterflies, and that in turn helps the rest of the food chain. So a healthy flora will lead to a lot more wildlife in the area.
You must know Dorset back to front, because you're from Poole, you work in Weymouth, you also work at Kingham, you work literally all over the place. Are there any sort of particular sort of reasons you feel that the grasslands of West Dorset are in need of a bit of extra sort of TLC?
Well, grasslands have been in decline over the last 50 years, and they need our help, mostly due to sort of large-scale agriculture. So our project is focusing on small areas that maybe landowners can't afford to have contractors do the work. So we bring a group of volunteers once a fortnight to come and do gentle tasks on the reserve, such as clearing scrub or laying hedges, that kind of work. So it's a great way to get out and meet new people.
And keep fit.
And keep fit, exactly, yes.
Almost without realising it.
Exactly, yeah. It's hopefully a fun way to get out and get more fresh air and get a bit fitter.
I think this might be a bit of an obvious question, but I'm guessing you've got green fingers to do this.
Fairly, but that's not necessary. You don't need any sort of previous experience. We'll give you all the training if you want to come along. It's only involving the use of simple hand tools, which we'll provide the training for. So it's nothing that you need to be too green-fingered to have a go at.
I can give a good selling point on this as well, because Lawton Meadows is beautiful. It's somewhere you can hear a pin drop out there on the right day, can't you? It's lovely. You can hear the birds singing.
Yeah,
it's
that's very, right. Very hopefully tranquil. Down in the valley it is. It's a lovely place.
I think anyone who works there probably has the best office space, I'd say, of anyone I know.
Yeah,
what do you particularly enjoy about the job?
Well, all sorts of things. I love being outdoors. I wouldn't like to work in an office all the time, so I like to be out and get to see bits of the countryside that maybe other people don't always get the chance to see. And it's such a varied job, and I get to meet a lot of interesting people. So, yeah, I really enjoy it.
We're talking about the great outdoors this morning. Catherine Mason, who's a project manager from Dorset Wildlife Trust, is with us this morning. Talking about opportunities for you to get involved in volunteering and helping our great outdoors here in Dorset, Catherine, because it is a great outdoors. We're actually very, very lucky to be here.
It is, yeah. Dorset is beautiful and has one of the most varied landscapes of any county in England. We have so many different habitats from the coast all the way inland, lots of lovely ancient woodland and grassland. So we are very lucky down in the south.
Lots of great places to explore, lots of ways people can get in touch with you and find out more about this as well.
Yeah, that's right. If anyone wants to get involved with our volunteer group, you can go to our website, which is www.dorsetwildlifetrust.org.uk.
That's a pretty simple one to remember,
it is,
isn't it? There's
yeah.
no hyphens, there's no,
no
dashes.
All one word. And all the information's on there. There's also information about our 50th anniversary, which is this year.
This is great. This is a major landmark as well, isn't it? I think a lot of people might be surprised that Dorset Wildlife Trust has been around so long, but there's loads of great stuff going on to celebrate
there
it as
is.
Well.
There is, yeah. Because we were founded in 1961, we're having a year of celebration this year. And one of the things going on right now is the 50 for 50 challenge. We're challenging everyone in Dorset who loves the county and who loves wildlife in the area to try and raise £50 to go into a big fund that will secure the future of Dorset's wild spaces.
I was going to say, just how big a deal is this? For people that don't know, these things actually do have to be secured,
They do, that's right.
Just explain this a bit about that.
Yeah, we're hoping this fund will be able to be used in the future for emergency land purchases, to save places from development, that kind of thing, or used as match funding for some of our key projects. So there's all sorts of things that it will be really useful for. And we're hoping if every member household in Dorset raises the £50, we should make £650,000 for Dorset's future
in
wild areas.
If you've missed any of these details, all this will be on the Big Dorset Brunch podcast going online a little while after this show is finished at 11 o'clock. But Catherine is joining us here this morning. And I like this, 42 nature reserves on Dorset Wildlife Trust's
books.
That's
right.
And this is yet another challenge. And I really like this because this could be as hard or as easy as you want it to be.
Yeah, that's true. The other challenge going out to everyone across Dorset is our 42 to do challenge. We have 42 nature reserves that cover the whole of Dorset, so they're very varied. And we're challenging everyone to get round as many of them as they can this year. Now, you could do this all in one go if you want. We've published a map available on our website with a good cycle route around the county. It could be over the course of the whole year. You could do it as a fundraiser. You could do it with your school or with your local group. There's lots of ways to get involved, and there'll be prizes for the most inventive method of getting around or for the fastest.
Are we expecting go-karts or anything like that?
I don't know. It's only limited by your imagination.
Or a sack race or something like that, people jumping around
could
in
do.
Sacks.
We can't wait to see everybody's photos of them attempting this challenge.
You said you studied ecology, was it?
That's right.
At university.
Yes.
Is this always what you set out to do? Because it must be a really interesting and very varied job.
It is, pretty much. I was always interested in conservation. I used to watch David Attenborough programmes and always loved the outdoors and the natural world. I had a head start because both my parents are involved in ecology, so I was always encouraged to go in this direction, and it's just what I love to do.
And Dorset, I mean, no finer place to
no,
work
exactly.
From that
I'm
point
very,
of view.
Very lucky to live in Dorset, obviously. I went away to university but had to come back because this is home.
I was going to say it's home, isn't it? And I'm so envious of anyone who does your sort of work because you get to work outdoors.
Exactly.
And just outdoors in some of the most beautiful locations as well.
Yeah.
Have you got a favourite at all? Anywhere you think, oh, I'm really glad I'm going there today?
Oh, I don't know. There are so many to choose from. Obviously, Lawton Meadows, where I spend a lot of time, is a lovely place to go. But also out on Portland, the quarries up at King Barrow, we have a reserve there. That's beautiful. Some of the others in West Dorset are lovely as well. There are too many to choose from.
Yes, Catherine Mason there from the Dorset Wildlife Trust. Loving her job. DorsetWildlifeTrust.org.uk for more information if you've got green fingers as well.
BBC Radio Solent.
Loving life in the South.
That's it for this edition of the Big Dorset Brunch podcast. Don't forget you can hear the show every Saturday from 8 o'clock on 103.8 FM. And there's more Dorset news on our website, bbc.co.uk/Solent.